So here's a puzzle for you. If pop culture is all about the next big thing, why does so much of it celebrate the past? Like, why is retro chic a thing? Why do so many movies get remade? And why do so many of today's pop hits sound like they could have been released decades ago? Music critic Simon Reynolds is the author of Retromania, Pop Culture's Addiction to Its Own Past. He thinks we've reached a tipping point in our taste for nostalgia. He talked with Steve Paulson.
A lot of cultures and societies feel like the past was the golden age and we're fallen in some way. So that aspect is not new. What is new, I think, is this sort of fixation on the immediate past. You know, the sort of way the material is available to us in terms of film footage, videos, images of the stars and the clothes they wore, and also just the recordings, you know. And that means that retro is a lot more exact in its copying of the past.
Hmm. So there's actually a certain faithfulness to copying it. It's not just sort of, I don't know, blandly drawing on certain influences from, let's say, the 1980s. It's actually, you know, really knowing what was going on there and kind of making an exact copy of it in certain ways.
Yeah, I mean, the people, you know, if you look at an artist like LaRue, she's gone to some trouble to get that 80s synth sound, you know, and actually have the limitations of the music at that time. So you could get a much less rigid sort of rhythm these days with modern technology. But she's gone for that certain kind of stiff electronic sound, you know, those simple sequenced electronic patterns. Obviously, she loves that period of music. People can do it more creative than other people, and people kind of shuffle fragments from different eras and different sort of stylistic traits and things together to make interesting results. One thing that I do in the book is I actually look at rock's own history of revivalism and looking back. It did start quite early. The first major wave of it was in the early 70s when you had the 50s rock and roll nostalgia wave, and that was in music with Shanana, and John Lennon did some very basic stripped down 50s inspired music, but you also had it in movies with American Graffiti, you had Happy Days series. It was a sort of culture-wide moment of, I guess the 70s was a quite dark and depressing time, and also music had got kind of very sophisticated, so there was a kind of nostalgia for the simplicity and seeming innocence of rock and roll.
Now, what you've done here with your book Retromania is more than just survey what's been going on. You're making an argument here that there's something bad about all of this. I mean, you're saying that, we're losing originality, or many artists today really don't know how to be original because they keep just mining the past.
Yeah, I mean, I see it a lot with new bands where it's very easy to see their reference points. But also, you know, you read an interview with them, practically the first thing they do is they reel out their reference points. It's almost become like a mode of creativity or recreativity, really, because they're more like curators or editors in the sense that they sift through all this material because it's there and it's super accessible.
Give me some examples of this.
Well, some of these people who do it, you know, I rather enjoy. There's an artist called Destroyer. His new album, Kaput, it's actually not typical of all his work, but he's done an album that's very closely inspired by the sort of mid-80s glossy intelligent pop of people like Prefab Sprout and the Blue Nile. There's also a bit of a Roxy Music kind of vibe. Like, he's very deliberately gone for these 80s mid-80s expensively produced signifiers, like he has sax solos. Apparently sax solos are coming back in a sort of kind of ironic yet at the same time genuinely enjoyed kind of way as an 80s reference point. The kind of sax solo you would get in a Hall & Oates song or certain Roxy Music songs from that time. It's actually a really enjoyable record. I really enjoy it, but it's interesting that that's how a lot of intelligent young musicians operate, in this sort of way of sifting through the past and piecing together an identity, and even doing it in a specific way for one project.
So are you saying then that today's musicians just don't know how to create new art because they're so obsessed with the past? I mean, with all these musical references, with this keen sense of history, but maybe in the process losing the ability to make something new?
I think that there's a certain sense in which I think people are overpowered by the abundance of all this archival material.
But they don't have to obsess over it. I mean, they could still go off as artists for eons have done to create something new.
Well, perhaps it's hard to when you're mentally crowded out by all these images. In the art world, these were issues that a lot of artists faced. For instance, there was this movement called the appropriation art, the pictures generation. And there was an artist called Sherry Levine who did these pictures that were kind of famous pictures that she reproduced, and then she put her signature on them, and they were called After Egon Schiele or After Walker Evans. And she had a manifesto that was all about how the modern artist is flooded with images. They've almost kind of glutted with the wealth of painting from the art from the past. Her art was about that. It was actually addressing this issue of how to find something new to say in a sort of cultural environment where you're just flooded with material, you know.
Mm-hmm. You write about something that I'd never heard of before, hauntology. Can you explain what this is?
I'll try and keep it simple. It gets quite labyrinthine. But, I mean, hauntology is this term that actually Jacques Derrida came up with, and it was specifically to do with the idea that Marx, although communism was considered dead, the ghost of Marx stalks our culture as this kind of reproachful figure, the idea of equality and the sharing of wealth and all these things that an ideal form of Marxism represented, you know, that is still a reproach to the world, even despite the declaration of the end of history and the triumph of liberal capitalism. Hauntology's had this resonance outside philosophy and political theory. It's been picked up by artists. There's a lot of artists who are using ideas to do with haunting, memory, ruins, you know, all these sort of slightly morbid and bleak seeming concepts.
You write about a Scottish duo called the Boards of Canada, which you say was the immediate ancestor of the UK hauntologists.
Yes, well, the Boards of Canada is a kind of, the name itself is referring to these educational movies that they used to see as children, the brothers who were behind Boards of Canada. So that has an association with sort of childhood, school, the kind of sense of wonder that you had for nature documentaries and scientific programs showing microbes or whatever. Those kind of associations is what they're playing on. But also the sounds they use are often very deliberately sort of faded and distressed and have a kind of quality that's actually like a sonic equivalent of like old Super 8 childhood movies, you know, where they've kind of mottled with colour and are fading a bit or yellowing.
I love you.
You know, I listen to the Boards of Canada and it has this really potent effect on me, partly because some of the sounds they use remind you of the music in these sort of educational movies or children's TV programmes of the 70s when I was a kid. Synthesizer sounds that kind of have this, it's a bit like Proust's Madeleine cake, you know, where the character bites into the cake and all these memories flood back. Listening to their music has that effect, the eerie effect of memories coming to my head, images from childhood. And I think this is what a lot of these groups are playing on.
Well, it seems that there's a paradox at the center of everything that you're saying here. On the one hand, you say this is lame and shameful. I mean, sort of this obsession with, you know, mining the past. But you clearly enjoy a lot of this, too.
Yeah, it's a conflicted book. I'm always interested in innovation and stuff I've never heard of, you know, that sounds like I've never heard anything like it before. And I'm always looking for that sort of future rush is what I call it in the book. But at the same time, I'm deeply nostalgic person and could happily spend hours on YouTube.
So when you look into your crystal ball, do you think this rerun culture or this retro culture will just keep going on forever, or will it end at some point? And if so, what will bring it to an end?
Well, one thing actually that could bring it to an end, I think to some extent, will be the decline of a thrift store economy. If more and more books and music only exist in digital form, you don't need to throw it away, and you can't throw it away, and you can't sell it on. So at a certain point, there'll be a cutoff point thrift stores and flea markets and similar places will only have 20th century pre-digital analog era material. Maybe that stuff will carry on having an interest. But I think also maybe a new breed of people will come along who've never owned culture in a physical form and won't have any interest in cluttering up their lives. They'll want to be mobile. They'll want to have empty apartments. As the cloud develops, people won't even own the stuff inside their computers. It'll be up there somewhere.
Simon Reynolds is the author of Retromania, Pop Culture's Addiction to Its Own Past. Steve Paulson talked with him.